Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes, it's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it, especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things people love.
Over the last 75 years, over 10,000 chemicals have been introduced to our food supply. Yet the EU only allows 300 food additives. But at Thrive Market, we bring our members the highest quality brands and restrict more than 1,000 ingredients found at conventional grocery stores. Making the switch is easy with our Healthy Swaps scanner, which finds better versions of all your favorite pantry, snacking, and home essentials without the added junk, dyes, and fillers. Plus, it's all delivered straight to your door. So if you're looking to shop at a grocery store that actually cares about your health, go to thrivemarket.com/podcast and you'll get 30% off your first order and a free gift.
Coming up on episode 359 of Wheel Bearings, we've got the Ford Mustang Mach-E Rally, the Mercedes-Benz EQS and BMW XM, the new Genesis GV80, Hyundai and Kia testing J3400 ports on their EVs, updated Cadillac Escalade, there's a new Honda Passport coming, the 2025 Ford Explorer gets an upgraded interior. Ford is expanding Super Duty production instead of building EVs in Ontario. Lexus has a hot little crossover hatchback and some new Audis, including the new A5 coming. All that and more coming up next. All right, this is episode 359 of Wheel Bearings. I'm Sam Abual Samich from Guidehouse Insights.
And I am Nicole Wakelin from CarBuzz.
And I am Roberto Baldwin from SAE International.
Just international? International.
I might have to go to Germany.
Ooh.
Soon.
Nice.
I need to do something with some Germans, but Germans... Like, they sent me an email over the weekend. They're like, you know, we're all going on vacation, right? People might not know, but Germany just shuts down in August.
It's going to be in August in a week. Basically, all of Europe shuts down.
I know. They're
like, I wish we were more like Europeans in that respect.
Wouldn't that be nice?
A whole month.
I got super excited because my boss told me, like on Friday, he's like, yeah, I'm just telling the whole team to take a half day. I was like, oh, cool. I was like really excited about that. I'm like, in Europe, that would just be like, that's all you're getting us?
A whole half day?
Whole half day. It was great because I had to drive to Anaheim from over by Knott's Berry Farm. I was in L.A. all week, and now my brain hurts because of all the places on the planet, L.A. is the only place I'm allergic to, apparently.
Oh, really? Jeez.
All of L.A. you're just allergic to?
I lived in L.A. twice, too, so I don't know what's happened as I've gotten older, what's happening in L.A. that's changed, but yeah.
Oh, well. So what have you been driving, Robbie?
Well, I'm glad you asked. So before I talk about my
well, I'm glad
trip to LA,
you're glad I asked.
I'm glad you asked. Before I did my little trip to LA, I had the Mercedes-Benz EQS. Now, I've had the EQS probably like 17 times at this point. It's not a new car. I'm sure I've talked about it here. It's been around for a while. I had the 450 plus sedan. It has 352 miles of range. That's a lot of range. I didn't drive it 352 miles, though, because I was very busy that week. I was doing other things. It's – I don't know what else I can say about the EQS that I haven't said before when it comes to, you know, it's very comfortable. It's very smooth. It doesn't present that S-Class passenger experience. There you go. That's really the takeaway of the EQS is that – if you're the driver, you're like, all right, I'm getting all this cool stuff. You get the nice big hyperscreen. But if you're the passenger, and it's the rear passenger of the S-Class that people are sort of
front
like,
passengers are okay, but it's just the
front. Well, you get a little screen in the front, which I think we've all. I don't care. And everyone I try to excite, I'm like, hey, look, there's a screen. You can do things, and I've used the EQ the EQ screen before to like watch movies while someone else was driving. And I was like, all right, well, I tested it. It works. And I just close it because I'm just like, but what I do, while I was driving around, I was reminded of how much I like Mercedes-Benz infotainment system. There's zero layer infotainment system because they've sort of done away with everything. And they're like, you know what you want? You just want the map. That's all you really care about. And other things are going to surface as little buttons as they're needed.
Yeah, they show up as little widgets on the corners. Yeah. But they're
not there all the time. They're only there when you need it. Like if you have your phone plugged in, it's playing music. Oh, then the little media player pops up. And you can go forward, backward, whatever. You can click on it. It'll open up CarPlay or Android Auto or if you're just playing things from, Sirius XM, if you're that person who's still doing that. If you do navigation, okay, then I'll navigate.
You know who does Sirius XM? The people that deliver cars to me.
They have to set it to a certain song. Too, right? It's like Soft Jazz or something.
No, it's usually some like news talk channel or something.
Really? Like yeah. I saw there was a piece of paper left once in a car that had like all the things that the delivery people had to do for the, and one of them was like what channel the car was supposed to be on. So I guess maybe it doesn't really matter in Michigan. They're like,
apparently not. Anyway,
what's nice. So I'm driving around in the CQS and you can tell it, I want to go from here to here. Hey, Mercedes. I want to go to LA and it'll like a Tesla. It'll tell you, okay, you need to stop here and get some electricity and then you can keep going. It'll take you this long, which is nice. So it's like the closest thing to sort of Tesla's setup. What's also nice is that while you're driving around, if you look at the map, it'll show you all the little charging stations in your area. And not only will it show you, there'll be a little number. So there's a charging station. I was like, let's say four stations at this location. It'll tell you like one of four is available.
Well, that's nice.
Yeah.
And so you can glance at the map and you can decide where it is you want to go, based on, how much of a hurry you're in. Yeah,
exactly. So like when I was driving around, I had the I-7. And I went to LA over like 4th of July weekend. And while I was driving down there, and there were some times where I was just like, I got a little time. Maybe I should get some charging in. And I had to open up 50 apps and I had to figure out, which one's available, where is it at? None of the apps are great. Mm-hmm. They're not great at sort of showing, you're here and here are the charging stations. And you can tap on them and it'll like open up. It's like, here are the charging stations. And then it'll give you a list. And the list and the charging station, they don't match up. You're just like, I guess, hold on, let me hit this. Is this the one I want to go to? Is this the one? So I think for that, I think Mercedes, their infotainment system is really nice. I still really like their voice command stuff. It's gotten better and better over time. Of all the cars out there, this is the one I don't really even use CarPlay all that much with, because it's like, boom, here's your music. Here's a quality navigation system with a nice mapping system. And you're like, I just need to go forward and backwards in my music. I'll go into whatever music I'm playing or audiobook or Audible or whatever, or podcast and change stuff. But for the most part, I just like leave it on the zero layer. So for Mercedes, good job on that. They're currently working on a software defined vehicle, and based on what I've seen and how I've talked to them, I've talked to their CTO a few times about it. I have a really good feeling about it, just because they have this their infotainment system is solid. It's not got like weird things. They're not They're doing it in a way that sort of makes sense. Like, it's like, okay, and you can bring up the old style with that looks like an iPad essentially with all the whatever. But I really like this. I really like the idea. They're like, this is what people want. Just give them what they want. And when they have something that they need, it'll surface it. It'll pop up as a little widget and then you click on it and you can do your thing. So kudos to them for that. And then after driving that for a few days, probably a week. The last time I drove this car was on a long road trip from Phoenix, Arizona to the Bay Area.
Yeah.
So that was my introduction to this vehicle. I now have, and then this week I went to LA again for more work and I drove the 2024 BMW XM, But this time it was the label. The red label. Yeah. It is very fancy. It is their quickest vehicle. Well, it has the most power. 738 horsepower. So it's their most powerful M, which is yay. It'll do 0-16 3.7 seconds, which I'm like, oh, okay, that's fine. But it's a plug-in hybrid. So you plug it in, you get 30-ish miles of range. I think EPA, I believe, is 31. Let me double check. Blah, 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 blah. Wait, where'd it go? Yep, there it is, 31. You get 31 miles of range, which if you're just driving around town most times, going to work, half, you know, you're going to be fine with that 31 miles. And then you have, you know, your gas. And because it's a long road trip, plug-in hybrids are great around town. Plug-in hybrids on a long road trip, you're not charging up that battery as much as you would as if it were a hybrid. So, you know, I wasn't really doing much electric driving while cruising down the cruising down Interstate 5. I will say though, gasoline only, 14 miles combined, miles per gallon. That's what the EPA says about this vehicle.
That's impressively bad.
Yeah.
I got on the way back in a headwind, 21 miles per gallon.
Oh, wow.
On the way down, where you also have to go up the Grapevine, I got like 24 miles per gallon.
So how did you manage that?
I wasn't going slow. I was doing 80 the whole time because the speed limit's 70. The responsible thing to do is to go 10 miles over the speed limit.
The responsible thing is to go with the flow of traffic.
Yeah, I'm always
just typically 10 miles an hour over the speed limit.
Yeah, which is typically 10 miles an hour over the speed limit. People were still passing me like crazy, like in it's always fun to see a Toyota Prius doing like 100 miles an hour. Like that person's, they're really, really booking. But yeah, no, I was really impressed at the miles per gallon. I was like, wait, what did it say? 14 combined.
Yeah, I'm looking at fueleconomy.gov. That's what it says, 14 combined.
Yeah. And, you know, driving it around L.A., I went from one part of L.A. to another part of L.A. And, yeah, and so then on the way back, I'm like, well, let me reset it again. Let me see what I can get. And that drive up from the south up to the north, you're always hitting this crazy headwind at some point on Interstate 5. And even with that, and even with me going faster than 80, because I had a horrible headache and I just wanted to go home. I get my sinuses just get destroyed by Los Angeles for whatever. Maybe it's the smog. Maybe I've acclimated out of the smog, the ability to fight smog. But yeah, no, it was really nice. It was like, this is doing really well. I'm doing pretty good. You know, you got to.
So what you're saying is, you know, for somebody that's looking for a nice vehicle to use for Uber that is going to be reasonably fuel efficient, the XM would be a great choice.
Yeah, the XM, and it starts at $185,000, which is, you know, right up there with what I'm assuming an average Uber driver makes. The version one I have is $191,895, so a little bit more, just shy of $200. Wow. You know. And what's funny is that, you know, you're paying that much money for a car. You don't care if it's getting 20 miles an hour or three.
You really
miles
don't. You have
miles, or one, you know, 20 miles per gallon or 3 miles per gallon. But I was just like kind of confused. I'm like, I don't think it's supposed to be getting this good of. Okay, all right.
You sure it wasn't set to like, you know?
It was on hybrid mode, so sometimes it would use the E. But it, like, if you're just driving on the freeway. In the middle of the week, so there's not a lot of traffic. So it wasn't like I was slamming on the brakes. And
you sure it wasn't like showing power. You like kilometers per gallon?
No, I was double checked. It was really miles per gallon.
Seems like what's wrong?
That would be right, you know, right about in the right ballpark. You know, 20, 21. You know, if you're getting 14 miles per gallon, it's going to be around 20-ish kilometers per gallon.
Yep, miles per gallon.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. It's 4.4 liter twin turbo V8. Yeah, obviously I'm not using turbo because I'm just like cruising on the
freeway. I mean, that V8's going to be putting out, you know, somewhere 550, 600 horsepower, you know, plus the electric motor.
Yeah. I didn't put it in like eco mode. I had it in comfort mode the whole time. I didn't put in any M mode while I was driving on the freeway because what's the point of that? Yeah. It's very comfortable. It's got that weird ceiling with the lights and the little polygon roof. It's a comfortable car. I've slept in the back of one of these before on my way back from Phoenix, Arizona.
What happened there? Okay.
I was very tired. And so it has little pillows that come with it. And so the pillows were in this really nice, like a duffel bag almost, but super fancy. It's all XM and it's like
got all branded
diamonds, yeah, like etched into it. And I think the charging cable is in there as well. So yeah, no. Yeah. Yeah. It's a
fast economy car.
It's a really fast economy. I'm telling you, it was ridiculous. I was like, all right, miles per gallon. All right, okay.
That's not bad.
And you can see whenever I would put the, we're heading up the grapevine, it's like five. Yeah. It's like you're getting 5 miles per gallon right now. You're just like, up the hill. But yeah, no, it's like one of the things they talked about is like, oh, it's like a rock star car. It's like business from rock star in the back. And I had like my guitar gear and my amps and stuff in there because I had band practice in LA while I was down there for work. And it's a perfect rock star machine. So if you're a rock star who makes a lot of money, more than I do, and you just need something to go up and down the state for all your gigs, and you have your guitar in your amp or your bass in your amp, or you could probably put your drums in there, but it's probably going to scratch it all up. But your keyboards,
all your musical equipment,
you can fit it in the XM. It's got vented seats. It's got heated seats, so you can keep your body warm or cool. Like it has a little cool. It has the drink cooler, so you can warm up your drink or cool your drink. That thing's the best.
You're so silly, but they're the best things ever.
That's like one of the number one things I want on every car now is like, because sometimes I'll leave a drink in the car and I'll get in the car later and I'm like, oh, I'm gonna drink someone's drink. And like, oh my god, it's like hot coffee.
There's this weird the first time I saw him, it's like, oh, this is the stupidest thing. And then I used him, like, this is the most brilliant thing. Every car must have these.
I need to keep my drink cool for the duration of my drive.
The entire drive, so. It needs to be kept either nice and toasty warm if appropriate, or pleasantly cooled. Yes.
Pleasantly cooled. Let me see. Where is the destination chart? Oh, there it is. Okay. So $191,895 car gets better gas mileage for, I don't know what I was doing. Maybe maybe someone was pulling up behind me and just putting gas in the tank when I wasn't paying attention. So what do you,
or somebody was reaching over and plugging in, so you were getting more battery.
Yeah, like someone's driving up next to me and like plugging in.
You didn't even know it.
Somebody in a Lightning, so somebody was hanging out the bed of a Lightning with a charging cable and plugging in, cool, and driving along beside you for a while.
I don't know how.
Nicole, why don't you guess first?
Destination.
Oh God, I don't know. I'm going $12.95. I don't know.
All right, $12.95.
Usually BMWs are surprisingly cheap on destination, like $995. But I'm going to guess that this one is closer to like $1,995.
Oh, Nicole wins. It was $995. You should have gone with your gun.
Oh,
now.
I win. Yay!
$995, exactly. Oh, you should have phoned a friend.
Should not have gone against your instincts.
Should not have gone against your instincts. Yeah, no, it's weirdly inexpensive to have
inexpensive in the weirdest ways.
Yeah, and for your weird car that gets, again, 20 miles per gallon. It's like 20 point something. I'll go take a picture if I have to.
He's like, I'll prove it to you guys. I got proof. Picture didn't happen, Robbie. I know.
Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes, it's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it. Especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things. People. Love.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Did you know you can support Wheel Bearings directly? Head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia and you can become a patron today. Your contributions will help fund the platforms and tools we use to bring the podcast to you. And exclusives and improvements are already on the way thanks to your generosity. So if you want to be part of an automotive podcast like no other, head to patreon.com/wheelbearingsmedia. We've updated the Wheel Bearings merch store, and now there's a whole bunch of new choices, new colors, new styles, t-shirts, sweatshirts, hoodies, hats, mugs, travel mugs, stickers, aprons, tote bags, you name it. You can get your Wheel Bearings merch at shop.wheelbearings.media. Go check it out. And if you order before December 13th, you will save 25% off on your whole order. That's shop.wheelbearings.media. All right, Nicole, yeah. What about you?
I was driving the 2025 Genesis GV80, which is all new-ish. It's not really, this is kind of weird.
No.
Because it's not. It's like kind of sort of new.
It's a mid-cycle refresh.
Like bits and pieces are new, but they're very excited about it. So the powertrains haven't changed at all. So you still have two to choose from, and I had the 3.5 turbo, which is the same thing, the V6 that I drove on the launch program. I don't know, it was a little while ago. So I've driven this before, but now this was a chance to like sit and drive it for a week. And I liked it the first time I drove it. I liked it the second time I drove it. It's a nice, I mean, in terms of power, it's pleasant to drive. You know, it's got plenty of oomph. It gets up and go. For the 2.5, there, the smaller engine, 300 horsepower, 311 pound-feet. For the larger engine, 375 horsepower and 391 pound-feet of torque. And they both get an 8-speed automatic transmission. So driving the more powerful engine, totally fine. I mean, it actually is pretty responsive. I had to drive in and out of Boston this weekend. So I had to fight traffic in and out of Boston, which is an exercise in patience and not getting killed by people cutting you off. And it was fine weaving in and out of traffic like you do trying to get out of Boston. So I really enjoyed driving it. Here's a funny thing. So I picked up my daughter and her boyfriend from the airport. They are young 20-somethings who are both software engineers. And they don't have
nerds.
No, totally on point. They're both nerds. They sit down, both of them, what is up with the screen? Why is the whole car just a screen? They hated the large screen. Not a Genesis thing specifically, but like having that one big screen. So you've got your like digital
input. See?
That whole.
That's what I keep saying. No one's clamoring for more and more screen in their car.
Just wait till they see the new Escalade.
I know, right? I said this isn't even the most, like, why do you have all that? Why do you need all that? Why is there so much? Like, both of them were completely turned off by this. I'm like, well, clearly it's missed the mark with this generation. So I thought
it's part of the software engineer full employment program.
Yeah, exactly. Right. I'm like, this is how you maintain your job, guys. Be happy about this giant screen. So I thought it was funny that they didn't like that. They did, however, love that there are heated and ventilated seats in this top prestige trim for both the front passengers and the back. And it was really, really hot. They turned on the ventilated seats, which the boyfriend had never experienced. He's like, I don't know how I feel about these. And he's like, oh, this is pretty good because I was kind of hot and this is working out for me. So he was just like, I don't know how I feel about these.
Ventilated seats, thumbs up.
Yeah, he's
like, giant right, screen.
Yeah. Big screen now, ventilated seats. Yeah. So that was the hit of the car. It's a nice car to drive around. It has some neat trims. I wrote about this when I talked to one of their designers while I was down there. And this one had it. They have this thread. It looks like thread. So when you look at the dashboard, like where you'd have like wood or plastic or whatever, it's this natural, it's basalt that they've turned, the stone that they've turned into thread, and they've woven it in this pattern that's on the dashboard and on like the, it's like around the instrument cluster and stuff. It's like white and it looks kind of like a white background, sort of like a black kind of pattern. It's really pretty. It's a neat idea and it just looks neat. It's such a pretty car. And this one is
so like on the center console where it's got that kind of diamond pattern. Is that what you're talking
about? Yeah, that kind of diamondy pattern. That's actually a basalt fabric. They took stone and turned it into fabric to make that woven thing. And they even had like a roll of it that you could see, like on a little spool that they used to make this. So that's what that actually is. It's actually stone.
This feels like alchemy to me.
It was alchemy.
We're taking rocks into, we're turning rocks into fabrics.
Well, then they, more alchemy. We turned newspaper into stuff inside. Now, the one I didn't have wasn't it, but they have, wait, I'm trying to find it because I heard about it. They use newspaper and they like sort of compress this newspaper in many, many, many layers. And they use the newspaper. And when you look at it in the car, it just kind of looks sort of almost same idea. It's the spot where this basalt fabric stuff, newspaper wood is what they call it. And it kind of looks like a black sort of stripe, almost kind of watercolory kind of texture, not like uniform black stripes. If you look at it really close in different spots and from the side, you can see little letters every now and then because it's actually newspaper. So, but you have to like really look at it from just a distance. It's just this nice little sort of, you know, pretty black and white pattern. No, it's a newspaper they used. So they did some kind of neat materials. I think it's kind of fun when designers do that and they think outside the box, like I'm going to reuse stuff and use stuff in new ways. So it was their whole, they have this, like, I think it's called inspired by nature thing that they go for. So that was their, you know, using the stone and recycling things. So very cool, very pretty interior, which is honestly one of the things that Genesis does really well anyway. They have beautiful interiors. They tend to be less expensive than more well-known luxury brands that have comparable features. I mean, I really love Genesis. I think they look good. You know, the exterior styling is great. It has that sleek sort of high-end looking look to it, but without being overdone. I like the Genesis. And so it is a luxury car, so it ain't cheap. So the base, this one, and now this is the top of the line. There's, I think, three trims with the base engine, two trims with the higher engine. So this is the top, tippity top. It is $81,300. So it's not an inexpensive little SUV. What do you guys think the destination is? Take your guess.
$1,195.
Okay.
I'm going to go 15.
Just now I'm doing math. It's $1,350.
$1,195.
You said $1,195,
Robbie? Yeah, I said $1,195.
You said $15. $5.
Yeah.
So I
you won.
I'd
$5.
Okay, there you go.
Oh.
It's almost right in the middle of the two. I'm like, why is it not easy?
Like, I mean, if it had been $1,345, then Robbie would have got it.
So see, you guys are so close, just opposite directions. So, I mean, $81,300 is not an inexpensive price point for a car, but I feel like when you see this, when you look at it, when you see the trims, when you see the features, you know, it has, you know, with the heated ventilated seats and with the sort of extra touches visually, and this had this beautiful, they call it ultramarine and glacier white was the color of my car. Anybody who plays 40K, that's all I can think of when I saw ultramarine. There's probably two listeners who get that reference, but that's what I thought of.
And 40K.
It's a tabletop board game. And one of the groups, one of the armies is called the Ultramarines and they're blue, but they're not.
Okay.
And that's, I've like known that forever. And somehow like I see that word and immediately I think of this game.
No wonder your daughter became a nerd.
Right? Right?
Both her parents were nerds.
It should be no surprise to anybody. But you know, and there's quilted leathers, like the Napa quilted leather. Everything looks like a premium luxury car. The seats are super comfy. The ride is really quiet. It is a lovely vehicle. I actually am okay with the screen that my daughter and her boyfriend thought were just awful. I think it's kind of nice. I mean, it's the only thing is because it's depending on how you, and that's, you know, this is a problem with a lot of vehicles that have the one screen that don't bother to give you sort of like a definitive instrument cluster screen and an infotainment screen, is that when things bleed across that screen, when it goes directly across, it looks neat and it's nice and uniform to have one giant surface. But you, depending on where you are, the steering wheel might cut some of that information. And it all has to do with just literally how you have your seat positioned, how tall you are, you know, all those things. It can be fine for you, Robbie, and then Sam could sit down, he has to move the seat and suddenly it's clipping something or vice versa. So it's sort of a weird thing with those screens. You know, when it was just tucked so that your instrument cluster was very clearly in front of your steering wheel set back, we pretty much all saw it all the time. When they bring these screens and they bring them forward a little bit, you can lose a little bit of information.
And they're so big. Well, I mean, they could, even though I only need to see this much.
So you, it's not like you're losing something crucial, and you can reconfigure things to, you know, see what you want to see. But it does leave that, like, you kind of have that sense sometimes, and it happens to me a lot. So I'm thinking it has to be my height and how I sit, like how I position the seat and the steering wheel that I often find like I'm just, it's just clipping a little bit on the right-hand side for me.
Well, what they need to do is, you know, they're putting driver monitor cameras in all these vehicles now. You know where the steering wheel position is. Use the driver monitor sensor to figure out where the driver's eyes are. And then have the software that control that drives the screen just automatically reposition stuff so that everything is within your view.
Would that be horribly hard to do from a tech point of view? Because that would be amazing.
No, not at all.
Look and say like, okay, the way Nicole's sitting, these things are too far out, and just move them in a half an inch. It's like, oh no, wait, the way Sam is sitting, we can use more of this real estate and move them out a half an inch. That would be amazing.
Yeah. So, I mean, the stuff that's in the area that would potentially be blocked by the steering wheel, it would be very easy to just reflow the screen, the display, and just move those elements either so they're within the you know, that top part of the steering wheel so you can see it there, or they're on the outside of it. It would not be hard to do. And I'm sure it's only a matter of time before somebody does it.
Yeah.
And I think maybe it'll be Kia with the EV9 and they'll, you know, move those climate controls that little screen area there.
Which is blocked by everyone, no matter who's sitting in the car, you're missing half of that thing.
There's that whole little section you can't see. And it's like, this is great, but
unless you lean over left, look around the steering wheel.
You have to lean right to see it. So choose which direction you want to awkwardly lean and still see where you're going to view that little section of the screen.
So
fortunately, they have the temperature controls like in the center console. But like all the other little bits that you like might want to use for whatever, like you're just leaning on. I'm like, this is the one thing on this car that's like doesn't make any sense. You're like,
well, there's that and this where the start stop button is.
I'm fine with
remember
that.
Where is it? I don't even remember where it is on the.
It's on the stock on the in on the stock. Inner part of the stock where the shifter is on the EV9.
That's right. Okay.
Where you have to reach around behind the steering wheel with your thumb to press it.
Spend so much time trying to make these things all perfect, all of the focus groups they go through, and then when we start driving things, you're like, this is silly, like we're
everyone,
in it for 5 minutes,
the same silly thing.
Right? It's not like we've been driving, like we all have to drive it for a whole week, or it's like we've been in the car for 5 minutes, we've gotten to the coffee break on the first drive. Why'd you guys do that? Yeah, we're all wondering. I can imagine they're like, crud. Everyone else said this was fine. They've been in this car for an hour and 15 minutes. They all hate this feature. That's weird.
They all hate this one. One crazy thing you won't like about your EV9.
You'll hate, yeah.
at least Genesis, you know, didn't put the vent controls in the touchscreen.
Okay, so I'll give them that. Yeah, that's my biggest.
Oh, I use the vent controls so much on the way to LA and back. And
I'm sure.
I was driving two BMWs.
Down on you.
Right?
Yeah, because I wanted blasting on me when I'm going. Then once I got to a certain point, like my hands are kind of getting cold. So I want the cabin to stay cool, but I don't want frozen fingers. So I adjust the vents. Like I adjust the vents constantly, especially on long
drives. I do too.
You're always adjusting things.
Everybody does.
Every time I complain about it on social media, people are like, what's wrong with you? No one ever adjusts the vents. I'm like, I always adjust the vents.
You know who that is complaining? It's the designers. It's the designers who came up with that stupid idea.
They're like, you don't. Yeah,
they have a lot of troll accounts where you're just like, nah, man, no one ever touched the vent. What are you talking about?
Okay, fine. But, then don't move the vents. You're a lunatic. Who doesn't move the vents on their car? As the sun passes through your car and you're at one point it's hot, the next point it's not. You're moving the vents around. Like you said, you want your hands to freeze, but you still want cold air. You're going to change things up. Normal people move the vents. Stop putting them in infotainment. Not you, Genesis. Everybody else.
And we know there are engineers and designers that listen to this show.
Mm-hmm.
So please.
Don't do it, guys. Just hold.
Take our advice. Do it.
When you like, we could just put that in the screen. Somebody else in your team, slap his hand and go, don't do it. Don't do it. They're all going to hit it. And they're going to pick on you.
Because you're adding complexity to the car. Whereas a lot of stuff they put in the screen, you're like, oh, we're reducing complexity because we don't have to have a wiring harness. There's not a wiring harness for that little nub that sticks out of your vent. You just grab it and move it with your fingers.
Even if it reduces complexity from a design perspective, it creates complexity from a user point of view. Having to go into your screen and hold it down.
It's a worse user experience.
Yeah, it's a terrible user experience. I don't care how seamless it becomes from an engineering point of view. It is a terrible user experience. Which has nothing to do with Genesis. Something I hate. Genesis didn't have those. You're fine, guys. Your controls for your AC and your heat were just fine. And I liked that. It was, So overall, I liked it. I mean, I do. I like Genesis a lot. I like the brand a lot. I like driving them. I feel like they do the luxury car thing that they're supposed to do. they come off like the luxury cars that they are at a more affordable price point.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. All right. Well, I had the Ford Mustang Mach-E Rally, which is the latest variant of the Mach-E. This is the one they first showed it as a prototype last year at the Goodwood Festival of Speed. And then later in the year, they announced, yep, we're going to put this in production. And then they did a drive program out at the Dirtfish Rally School in Washington about a month and a half ago. It doesn't actually go on sale until November of this year. So if
really?
You go,
I've like yeah. seen it everywhere. I guess it's fine because November is kind of rainy.
They've got them in the press time. Fleet. You know, we're driving them, but you can't actually get one till November. So
that's a bummer.
But that works out because, you know, just in time for winter. And you know, if you want the highest performance version of a Mach-E, like, you know, the equivalent of the GT, cause this has the same powertrain setup that's in the GT. So 480 horsepower, 700 foot pounds of torque. So lots of power in this thing, but unlike the GT, this one has, it's been lifted up about an inch. So it's got about an inch more ground clearance, which if you live somewhere where you get lots of snow, very handy. It also has, instead of the, 20 inch wheels, and I think they were, so the GT comes with 245, 45 R20 tires, performance tires, or you can get it with all season tires. On the Rally, they're 235, 55 R19s. And,
so
you get a little bit smaller wheels, a little more sidewall, a little bit slightly narrower. So they're going to be excellent in, you know, driving in snow. And it comes from the factory with Michelin Cross Climate 2 all weather tires. So these are not like your typical all season tires. These actually have more capability for snow, but they're not like full on winter tires. So they're kind of in between an all season tire and a winter tire. So they're better in the winter than all seasons, but
and they're not, Michelin, so they'll last longer.
Yes. They should give you good, lots of lifespan. And they look cool too. The tread pattern they have, they've got this sort of, arrow, like directional tread pattern. It's pretty cool looking tire. You know, with that extra bit of sidewall you got there from being a 55 versus a 45 and the extra ground clearance, this thing actually rides really well, you know, especially here in Michigan. You know, drove it around quite a bit over the course of a week. I put, you know, about 250 miles, I think, on it over the course of a week. And it was fantastic. You know, I really like this car. I've always liked the Mach-E. It's a reasonable size. It's not too big, but it's roomy inside. It's got lots of space for your stuff. You know, last week we took the dogs to the lake and had the paddleboard and, you know, a couple of little beach chairs and blanket and assorted other stuff. And, you know, everything, there was a place for everything, you know, that's got a good size frunk, you know, to put the damp stuff in there at the end of the lake session. And then it's, you know, lots of room in the back for the paddleboard and the chairs and stuff. So it's, that's a really nice car to drive. It's fast, you know, do 0-60, I think in 3.4 seconds. So it's plenty quick. You know, the charging speed is modest. It's not the fastest charging, but it'll charge at 150 kilowatts and, you know, it'll stay, you know, in that 150 kilowatt range out to about 40% state of charge and then start gradually ramping down. The Mach-E was one of the first non-Tesla vehicles to get updated back in March with access to Tesla superchargers. So it's got plug and charge support on superchargers. Mach-E owners prior to July 1st could get a free adapter to use the NACS connector. the J3400 connector, and plug that into your CCS port on the car. My local supercharger station here has a magic dock, so I didn't need that. And they didn't ship an adapter with the car when they brought it over. But I just used the magic dock and it was fine. And I also tried it at an Electrify America charger, nearby, and that one worked fine, just as well. Plugged it in. Everything was good. No problem at all. The plug and charge worked great. Just plugged it in, waited about a minute, and, you know, started charging. So, that was all good. Let's see what else. The infotainment system, you know, it's been the interface has been tweaked a little bit since the Mach-E first came out in 2021. But you know, it's still fairly responsive. It's pretty easy to use, easy to find stuff. They do have, an addition in the drive modes. You still have the, was it Whisper, and then the kind of the normal mode, and then the unbridled mode, which gives you the most sound, but it's all sound on the inside, you know, so it gives you a little bit of a Mustang kind of growl, but it's not just trying to replicate a V8, but trying to give you a little bit of a sound of performance. But in
it
that mode,
like a herd, not herd, a bunch of horses.
There you go.
A herd of horses.
Yeah.
A horse herd, as you would.
But there's an extra setting in there, you know, so in each of those drive mode settings, you've got the one pedal, you can turn the one pedal mode on and off, turn the sound on and off, and other stuff. They added it for the rally. They added the rally sport setting, which changes the thresholds for the slip control system, for the traction control and stability control. So, if you're, you know, trying to drift it, you know, on a dirt road, you can get it to get the back end to come around a little bit more and have some fun with it. And I played around a little bit with that on some back roads, here, some unpaved back roads, and, you can get the back end to hang out a little bit. It's not, you know, it's not like driving a GT500, but you can get it to swing around a little bit for you. And so it's good fun. I drove it on a bunch of dirt roads that are around here. Nothing like a rally course. But when I went to the Explorer Drive program on Monday, they had a sort of off-road course there where after I finished with the Explorer, I took the Mach-E rally through that course. It wasn't a very long course, but it was basically like just a trail through the woods. You know, so this thing is not, you know, gonna do the types of things you do with a Jeep Wrangler or a Bronco. But if you have a cabin out in the woods and you've got a two-track trail through the forest, this thing will handle that with no problem at all, as long as, you know, there's no really big rocks. I think winter conditions, or if you've got a place out in the woods, this would be a good choice for you if you're interested in a Mach-E. The Mach-E is currently the most expensive variant. Or the Rally is the most expensive variant of the Mach-E. Currently the Mach-E's start with the standard range rear wheel drive version starts at $39,995. The GT is now at $54,995. The Rally is, including delivery charge, $61,785. The one I had was in grabber blue, and with the white wheels that they put on the Rally that look like, you know, 1980s style Rally, you know, what you'd find on World Rally Championship cars. They're cool looking wheels. I like this wheel design. So the grabber blue with the white wheels and the big wing on the back, I think it looks pretty cool. And it's got a couple little fog lights in the front grill area, such as it is. You know, it's not actually a grill. But just shy of 62,000. Guesses on the destination charge?
Oh, 1,500.
You go first, Robbie.
Dead end.
What?
You're not looking it up, are you? You're cheating.
You're cheating. So I just automatically.
Me? No, my computer's over here. I just stare over
what
here.
Do you think?
I said 15.
Oh, I didn't even hear you say 15.
Oh.
It didn't come through at all. I'm going to go 1250.
1995.
Ooh, wow. Oh my gosh.
Significantly wow. increased the delivery charge. So they cut the MSRP so on the Mach-Es over the last year, but they jacked up the delivery charge. So you don't get
1995.
Yep.
That's a scam.
Yes, it is. It is.
Did you get a BMW XM?
For half that.
Wow.
For half of that. I mean, you could buy like four Mach-E rallies for the price.
You can get three Mach-Es for the price of one XM, but
yeah,
but you'll be paying $6,000 in delivery charges on those three Mach-Es.
Jeez, whew. Money, that's stupid.
That's too much money.
But if you want the quickest Mach-E that's able to be used, you know, in the woods or in winter driving, the Rally is the one for you. It's good fun.
That's the one.
It does look fun. It looks like a beehive.
Yeah. I don't like the infotainment system in those cars. I like that. I like them a lot. I like the Mach-E. I just don't like the info. Like, cause it just feels like it's like, boom, one thing is doing one thing and that's it. Like, and then there are like little itty bitty widgets for everything else. It's, I don't know.
Well,
I initially I was like, oh, this is a cool design. Yeah. And after a bit, I was in the Mach-E a few weeks ago. And it had the little adapter, and it was great. And you just went up to a Tesla station and just started working, which is bonkers. But yeah, the infotainment kind of after about a week, I was like, nah, I don't like this.
Yeah, okay. It's a matter of taste.
That's my big takeaway today.
But at least the vents, little tabs on there, you grab them, wherever you want.
that's the like the bar for everything. Where are the vents? How do you control them?
The vents.
And that is the new minimum standard.
Event.
So okay. Well, when I pulled up to that Tesla supercharger station with the Mach-E on my way back from the from driving the Explorer, as I pulled into that station, there were two Hyundai Motor Group vehicles parked over there that were wrapped in camo. And looking at them, it was pretty obvious that one was an Ioniq 5 and the other one was an EV6.
Yeah. The camo doesn't really do much to like. Yeah, I mean, no. If you've seen the car, you're like, oh yeah,
no.
Kia and Hyundai have shown overseas. They have shown refreshed versions of both of those cars that are coming here for 2025. So we'll get them for the next model year. But right now, there's the ones that they're driving around here, and this location, this supercharger, is about a 10-minute drive from Hatchie, the Hyundai America Technical Center Incorporated. It's their U.S. tech center. So it's about 10-15 minutes from there to the supercharger station. So around this area, you pretty regularly see Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis vehicles in various stages of camouflage out being tested. And you know, over the last 4 or 5 months, since they put in the Magic Docks and since they started rolling out support for non-Tesla vehicles to charge there, I've been seeing more and more non-Tesla vehicles at that station. I've seen a couple of different Hummers there that it's not clear if they're being tested by somebody from GM or if it's just owners that are taking advantage of the Magic Dock there. I've seen a variety of other vehicles using the Magic Dock, and I've tested a variety of different vehicles there. But when I looked closely at these two vehicles that were sitting there, you know, because each of them were being, they would get plugged in, they would wait a few minutes, and then the engineers would unplug them, move them to another stall, plug them in. And when I looked close, I noticed they weren't using either the Magic Dock or an adapter on there. And so after I got the Mach-E plugged in and charging, I just kind of, you know, discreetly strolled over, walked by, pulled out my phone, snapped a couple of pictures, and noticed that the Tesla supercharger connector was plugged in directly into a J3400 charge port on the car.
Dun, dun, dun.
So these are the first non-Tesla vehicles I've seen with J3400 charge ports on them, natively built into the car. So no adapters required.
Cool. I reached out to Hyundai earlier this year about Tesla charging. They said they would have their adapters out by the end of the year for Tesla supercharging. Mm-hmm. So This works well with their sort of timeline, what they want to do.
Yeah, and Hyundai did about a month or month and a half ago, they did announce that the first vehicle that they're going to build at their new factory in Savannah, Georgia, is going to be the IONIQ 5. And presumably, I'm guessing that they will also build EV6s there. Mm-hmm. Because they're, same platform, they're pretty similar size vehicles. It would be easy to do both of those vehicles on the same line. And they're supposed to start production. They said they're going to start production of the IONIQ 5 in the fourth quarter of this year. So later this year, my guess is that they will start building the refreshed version there. That's when we'll get the refresh here in the U.S. Coming out of the Georgia plant later this year with J3400 charge ports natively on the car.
That will be cool.
And I'm guessing, they haven't confirmed any of this yet, but I would guess that one of the changes that they're going to make, because there's a bunch of other changes. It's not just some visual updates to the cars, but they're also getting a slightly larger battery for the extended range models and some other tweaks. And I would not be surprised if these vehicles include changes to the charging system that allow them to charge faster on the 400 volt Tesla chargers. Because right now, existing Hyundai, Kia, and Genesis vehicles can only charge at 84 kilowatts because of the way that they use one of the windings on the rear motor as part of the circuit for the charging circuit for DC fast charging. That's because of the way they've got that set up. That's why it only charges at 84 kilowatts. So I'm guessing they're going to make some changes that address that to allow them to charge at 240 or so kilowatts like they can on CCS chargers.
That'll be very cool. That's nice.
Yeah.
Progress.
Let's see. Also this week, Cadillac announced updates for the Escalade for 2025.
Escalade.
And the Escalative. So this includes the regular Escalades and the Vs as well. Minor update to the front end, mostly to the lighting to bring it more in line with the design of the Lyric and the Optic with the vertical headlight stack. The big changes though are on the inside, and I'm sure that Rose and her boyfriend are going to love this interior.
They could be so upset. Yeah.
So basically, the Escalade is getting the 55-inch coast-to-coast display from the Celestiq.
Why? Why? No one's asking for these giant screens. No one's asking for a screen for the passenger. No one. No one's ever said, I wish my car had a better screen for the passenger.
And every time
I want more range. I want this other thing. It'd be nicer if like this thing. No one's ever like, man, if only this car had a bigger screen.
No one likes it. Every person I've ever been in a vehicle with where there's that passenger screen, nobody likes it. They're like, why do I have this? Could watch a movie. Yeah. I don't want to watch a movie.
I got a phone. Can I get on TikTok with this? No.
Well, first time my wife got into a Jeep that had one of those.
Yeah.
Why is there a screen here? This is stupid.
It's just you're throwing money at a thing that no one wants.
There's some idea that like it makes it. I mean, it does look a little high tech. But I don't think your car needs to look like you're like piloting a starship down the street. I don't know. Unless it comes with warp drive, I don't really want something with that many screens.
Well, that's the V. That's the Escalade V.
Okay.
So you get the 55-inch screen whether you like it or not.
Whether you like it or not. Here's a whole lot of screen.
A whole lot of screen. And then there's extra screen.
You can watch Hulu
and
then on
there's
it.
What? Is the smaller one I'm seeing down YouTube. Like more towards where the like below the giant screen, there's more screen.
Oh yeah, there's like it looks like it's the climate control.
So you have a screen, you have giant screen, and then little wedged in there tablet looking screen.
It looks like someone just like kind of propped up a iPad.
Did someone just leave a tablet sitting there by accident? Oh, no way. That's part of the garden.
Well, the giant screen isn't a touch screen. So you can
so touch stuff. So the touch screen part is all through this little screen.
Yeah.
It's a lot of screen things.
That's the same setup. It's the exact same setup that they have in the Celestiq. So when you look at this dashboard now, all the controls, the steering wheel, the whole design of the dashboard, that center stack, it's nearly identical to the Celestiq.
Mm.
Except the Celestiq is a sedan that costs twice as much as this Escalade, more than twice as much.
So many confusing things.
Put my hand up so I can't see it.
But you can now get the second row executive seating package. Ooh. in the Escalade for 2025.
Okay.
So that, you know, that gives you the really nice reclining seats and captain's chairs in the second row and a full console back there with two more wireless charging pads for your phones. And you know what? There's another screen back there too.
I'm fine with that back there, I guess.
And the high-end audio system continues to be from AKG. So if you don't get the second row executive seating, you get 36 AKG speakers. If you get the executive seating, that number goes up to 40 because you get an extra two speakers in the headrests of each of the second row seats.
I like it when you can see the speakers. Like here, you very clearly see the speakers in the headrest, like on either mm-hmm. side. But there was something I was in. They had the headrest. You can't see the speakers. Like they're embedded in there, and there's perforated leather. But it just looks like a regular headrest. I kind of like it better when you can't see it. A little bit.
Yeah.
I don't think you need to see that behind you.
These look like little bug creatures with their little eyes on the side of their head.
Oh, that's I see it now.
Well, if you're paying this kind of money for a vehicle, you want to see what you're paying for.
Well, you'll see it.
I get you'll see this giant mega screen.
Mega screen. I forgot the other visual change that they've made on the front, on the outside, is the Cadillac crest in the grill. You can now get it with a lit up outline, and it's also lights up the perimeter of the grill as well. So it's a little more like the EVs.
Oh, all right.
Okay.
I like a lot of Mercedes people did that. And then the ID4 came out.
Yeah.
I like the emblem or do a little extra lighting. I think lighting makes the car look snazzy. So I'm okay with the lighting.
It's like a little rave on wheels.
Party.
They did take one thing away from the Escalade for 2025. You can no longer get the 3-liter diesel 6-cylinder.
Is it because they didn't sell any?
Apparently, yeah.
No one was buying it.
We sold 4 of them,
which is a shame because that was a fantastic engine and surprisingly fuel efficient. And you could get 23, 24 miles per gallon with that diesel.
That's BMW XM range.
I know. all right.
They need an extra torque to haul that extra screen around.
They just covered the screen. The thing would move twice as fast.
Yeah.
I forgot. The Escalade IQ also has this same screen and the same dashboard. So they're sharing that. That's probably another part of the reason why they changed this, because they're sharing that dashboard with the IQ. With the electric Escalade.
Okay.
All right. So Honda teased that there's a new Passport coming next year. It's out testing now. So when the Passport came out a few years back, probably what, 5 years ago now, it was basically a 2-row version of the Pilot that was supposed to be more off-roady and sporty and rugged.
Mm-hmm.
And so they redesigned the Pilot last year. We still have the old Passport, but there's a new one coming next year. Yeah.
It's adventure ready.
Yeah.
The most adventure ready and capable Honda SUV yet is underway.
We'll see.
All right. Sure. Adventure.
Yay. Well,
yeah. Yeah. It's coming. And there'll be a trail sport version.
I have to get excited about the Honda Passport.
Yeah.
I mean,
I'm sure it'll be fine.
I'm sure
Hondas are always good.
That's the thing, is like, it'll be fine.
I mean, I guess the only question is, I mean, there's so many new, you know, more hardcore off-roaders out now, you know, Bronco, the new Land Cruiser, you know, the Ineos Grenadier, you know, is Honda really going to get serious about making this a true off-roader? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, Honda does make serious off-road vehicles in their side-by-sides and their quads. So they're, you know, they're power sports vehicles, but you know, will they actually try to make something to compete with the more on-road oriented off-road vehicles?
I don't, do you think it will be?
I don't know.
Robin,
I doubt it.
I think like the Ridgeline Honda like knows where people are actually taking these vehicles. Like you're not really,
doing off-road. You're like,
you're not doing it.
You're driving in the, might like, you know, the
get a Ridgeline
lot kind of thing.
It's got a trunk under, it's got a little storage capacity underneath the rear, underneath the bed. You can put things in it.
Yeah. Yay.
Put candy in there, shrimps, you know, whatever.
Only if you use lots of ice. Keep the shrimp cold.
All right. Nicole.
Yes.
Tell us about your visit to Audi.
Oh, so we went to, there's two Audi things on there. So I went to Germany a couple of weeks ago. And saw a bunch of Audi goodies, not all of which I can reveal just yet. But we did get a good look at the Audi A5. And two things out of that. First, I really, you know, we're just looking at it in a showroom, like or like a stage. You don't get to drive it. You don't get to see it move. So you don't really know anything about how it's going to drive. So you have this just sort of first impression thing where you're just looking at it and going, okay, how's it look? I really liked how it looked. I think it looks really good. I think they did nice design elements. The A5 kind of kicks the A4 to the curb. It's gone. And it was all that whole naming thing. Like the, I'm going to get it wrong. The odds and evens. One is gas. One is electric. And the A4 was not electric. So they couldn't keep it being the A4. And so now they just have the A5. And technically that frees up the A4 to be something else one day. Who knows, maybe. But for now, A4 is gone. We just have the A5. They did some nice stuff inside. You know, they did a really great job with the tech inside of it. It looks really good. They have the side screen that we're all just complaining about for the passenger, which, you know, but what I do like, they have the same thing in the e-tron, the Q6 e-tron that I drove a few weeks further back. They do. I hate that when the cars are parked or when they're not, the screen's not in use. It's just this ugly black box, like shiny black screen on the dashboard. It looks stupid. They have this sort of pattern that shows on it. So it kind of blends with the dashboard. It's like the smallest little design detail is actually really nice. And from the outside, it still very much looks like an Audi. You know, it has the Audi design look to it. The fun part was I learned that in Germany, they were translating all of this stuff because everyone spoke beautiful English, but they wanted to give the presentations in German, presumably so that they would make no mistake that would sound weird to us in English. And they had a translator. And at one point, the translator says to us, so the designer's like, and this chocolate side here, and we're like, I'm sorry, what? And we all thought he made a mistake. Like he clearly did not translate the words correctly. Cause what the heck is a chocolate side? And we discover that, like we say good side, like show me your good side. You know, you get a good side in a picture. Apparently in Germany, chocolate side is a phrase that means the same thing. I can totally get behind this idea. The chocolate side of something is like the sweet side, the good side. So it was kind of fun. Yeah. So it was kind of fun. We were all like, you must have translated that wrong. He's like, no, that's what he said. It's like, what did I say? Cause he could understand all of us. So yeah, we discovered that apparently it's only a German thing. Nobody else. There was a guy from Spain. There's a guy from Italy. All these people like, all right, we just say good side. So it's a very German thing to say that. So the designers, you know, were talking about the things they did to make it for how it looked. And they were also talking about the fact that, you know, that we're still going to have gas and powertrains. We're not just going to be, they're not going to be electric overnight. Like Audi sees it as being electric is where we're going. That's their end goal. But I think they're really cognizant of the fact that, you know, electric is not happening tomorrow and that they have to get there slowly but surely. So gas engines, not disappearing tomorrow morning, they're still here. They'll have hybrids. They'll have electric. So we're still getting a mix of stuff from Audi. So it was an interesting presentation. There are a couple other vehicles that we got to see. I like how this looks. They gave us back our exhausts that are actually exhausts. Remember how like the exhausts weren't like the exhaust outlet.
There was nothing flowing through them.
There was nothing flowing through them, and people were like, rage. And now they actually work. They're like real exhausts. So everyone's like, yay. It was much rejoicing.
Rage.
I didn't know people were so ragey about it until like after the fact. I'm like, well, people are mad about that. And I'm like,
oh, people get mad about a lot of weird things.
You never were like, I rage.
Just like things you're just like, why are you so angry about this?
I'm really angry about vents that you have to control on the infotainment screen. So I feel
That's a legitimate thing to be angry about.
That's okay.
I guess
if you're not,
I like when people got really angry. You get the little front spoiler protectors.
Oh, I get angry about those yellow, yellow things. They always
why?
It's just
why?
It looks stupid.
I mean, if you're not angry about the vents, like, there is something fundamentally wrong with you.
Yeah, if you're not angry about vents, that's a thing to really be angry about.
Is there
that's
anybody who likes them? I wonder if we have any listeners have a car that has
somebody it, must
like actually them. Says they're the somebody best like thing them ever. If you're that person, we'll think you're crazy. But let us know if you're the one.
They're not going to talk. They're not going to out themselves now because they're like, oh no, these three are going to make fun of me. They're going to call my mom and tell her that she did a bad job at raising me.
You can be like, I don't know, Micah 479 Airfare or something. Like, make up a name. Like it doesn't have to be your actual name. like a Twitter account or something. We'll never know who you are.
Hello, I'm John Smith, and I like software defined.
We need to do one of those things where, like, his real voice, the real voice sounds like me, and it's like, yes.
They had the dark,
right?
Back, and it's the background,
weird, black, blobby black thing over your face. Like, it's like,
yeah, they're wearing a hat.
Wanted, they're hiding the witness. Yeah, we could do that. I just want to know if anyone actually likes those stupid air vents. I did not have those in Ali. It's okay. and they did have some cool stuff that they showed us that was kind of, you know, we've talked about this before. There's things that they get in Europe that we can't get in the US. Once again, they have cool stuff we can't have. And one of the cool stuff we can't have is the lights on the back of the vehicle. We kind of get it, but we don't get all of it. So you can go into the infotainment screen and you can change the pattern of the lights. You can set different patterns and it changes a little bit what's in the head, like up in the front and the back. But there's set patterns. Like, here's pattern one for front and back. Here's pattern two for front and back. Here's pattern three. When the car is stopped, you go in there, you can play with it and you can pick one. In Europe, some of those patterns actually change. Like, while you're driving, they sort of have this sort of like pixelated kind of motion to them. We can't have that. So ours can be changed when we're stopped to set pattern, but they cannot do the cool little, and they even
have, can't be dynamic.
They can't be dynamic. And you can't, like, they even had one where it showed if you push the hazard lights in the car, it puts a little triangle in there, like a hazard light in your,
I think this lighting system is made by Morelli.
Yeah.
And I got a demo of this at CES last year.
Yeah.
They showed, you know, they didn't say which automaker was going to be implementing it first, but they kind of hinted at it, you know, and that it was Audi. And they showed us this demo. Yeah, things like the little triangle for the hazard lights and
that was
various
so cool.
Other things. Yeah.
There was some other stuff that I can talk about later. There was more stuff that I'm like, dang it, why can't we have nice things? They're like, oh, this is really cool. Yeah, yours doesn't look like that. Gosh, dang it, why are you teasing me? Like, I can't get that either. So it's like on other stuff that we looked at. So that'll talk about later because you can find some of the cool stuff. You can see examples. I'm sure you can see these online. If you look at Europeans and sites and stuff, you'll be able to see what they're getting that we can't get. Those darn Europeans.
Up now for like the last, I don't know, 20 years or so, Audi has been using the even numbers, like A4, A6, A8 for the traditional three-box sedans. And then the odds have been for like coupes and sportback models. And now it looks like there's no, you know, kind of traditional sedan anymore. You know, at least what they're calling the sedan is more, you know, fastback, sportback.
It's not. Yeah. So the odd numbers are now gas. The even numbers are now EVs. That's why the A4 had to go away. So that's, like they said, that's how that odd even number thing is going to work.
The Q4 e-tron, which is based on the ID4.
They're also keeping e-tron. So we asked, like, is e-tron the name e-tron? Because if you've made it so odd numbers are gas and even numbers are electric, you've already told everybody that it's electric without having to put e-tron in front, like along with it. But they said that e-tron is so recognizable that for the foreseeable future, e-tron is staying. So you'll have e-tron along with the, you know, the number and letter designation. E-tron's going nowhere. So you have both. What they showed off too, like for the A5, they have what they're calling, they're calling it a sedan, but they used to call it a sportback. So it was kind of like a hatchback, but they're calling it a sedan here, but it's not really a sedan. It's like a hatchback. And they also have a wagon that they call an Avant, because why could we just call things easy things?
Well, Audi's always called their wagons Avant.
Right.
That's
I mean, they have all these names, like all these names that, like, regular people, if you don't know the name, if you don't know the Audi lingo, you're like, what? Yeah. What are we talking about? But the Avant, which is the wagon, is just a Europe thing. We're not getting that. So we're just getting what they're calling the sedan. But it's and they used to call the sportback, and it's what we, I think most Americans would probably call a hatchback. So, yeah.
So is there no more coupe and convertible A5?
No more coupe and convertible. We're just getting, as far as I know, and from what they've told us there, it's just going to be this one body style, just the sedan. Sorry, I want to call it a hatchback. Just the sedan. So they've, yeah, so that's, so they're making some changes, you know, and I think part of it, they're trying to make the lineup, even just in the number of trims and stuff, they're trying to make the lineup a little bit make sense as they start moving to electric and have the things that people most want, and sort of simplify things a little bit and make them a little easier to follow. So that's all part of what you're seeing, and you will be seeing as things are, you know, coming over the coming months. Cause they had, like I said, I was only there to see one. I wasn't there to see just one vehicle. I was there to see quite a few things, and this is just the first one that the embargo lifts. So there's more stuff that they are doing that's all really cool. So we'll, as those embargoes lift, I'll chat about those too.
Okay.
Oh, are there any, you know, it was kind of like the Spain team that won the Euro Cup or whatever. They were at our hotel. Talk about chaos.
Oh, really?
Yes. They were at our hotel, and it was like an act of God to get into the hotel. Like, why are you coming in? I'm like, because I'm staying here. Prove it. I'm like, the room key is a white piece of plastic with no hotel name. I'm like, this is all I got. so it was very, yeah, but
this is your fault, mister.
Yeah. I'm like, it's your fault. Put your hotel name on your card. So it was an interesting challenge. So yeah, we got to see, and they all walked out with their game face. Like, we're going to win. And they did. So it was kind of cool.
Good for them.
Yeah.
All right.
Soccer.
Football
for them.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. Speaking of things, nice things that we can't have, the Lexus LBX. Have either of you ever heard of the LBX before?
LBX?
Nope.
I've never even heard of it. Where is it on your list? Oh, there it is. I see it. Sorry, I totally missed it. Okay.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
So the LBX is a compact, like a really compact crossover. It's based on the Yaris Cross, which is kind of like the Corolla Cross, but even smaller.
Okay.
So this is, I think, a Japan only model.
It's super cool.
Yeah.
Look at that little thing. That looks fun.
Yeah. It's pretty cool. And now they're adding a new variant to the LBX, the Morizo RR, which has the same powertrain that was in the GR Corolla Morizo edition, but it's not quite as hardcore as the Corolla, the GR Corolla Morizo, which had no back seat. You know, it had almost no sound deadening material in there. Rear windows didn't roll down, none of that stuff. You know, so they put all the good stuff from the GR Corolla Morizo into this LBX Morizo RR. And also kept all the other stuff that makes it a Lexus.
That make it a car you actually want to drive, not just on a track.
Yeah. This is something you might actually want to drive on a daily basis.
I need to take the rear seats out of my BRZ. So
seats you absolutely should ditch, because they're useless.
You can't do anything with, you can't sit back there. They're impossible.
Yeah. The dogs don't even like sitting back there, because there's like a big dip, and then there's the tunnel and then a big dip. They're like, I don't like it back here.
You're torturing them.
Yeah,
I know. That's why I'm like, rear seats. They're for suckers. Suckers and people with friends.
But the LBX Morizo RR does have rear seats. And your friends can actually sit in them.
It looks it looks like it should be a very fun car. Even the styling on it, it looks like a fun little car.
Yeah, and unlike the GR Corolla Morizo, This one, in addition to the 6-speed manual, there's also a direct shift 8-speed automatic available. And then you get the all-wheel drive and 300-plus horsepower in this thing. It looks like it would be it'd be a good time.
But it's going to be impossible to get. I'm reading there are 100 units of this.
200.
Additional. Oh, 200. So 200 units? That's really tiny. That's not a very many.
Yeah. Well, they only sell them in Japan anyway. Yeah. I mean, there were only 200 of the GR Corolla Marizos.
Oh, either. Okay. Yeah. I guess, you know, that sounds like such a small number in the U.S., but I guess in Japan, that's not quite as small a number.
This thing looks like it'd be good for a few laughs.
It would definitely be good for a few laughs. That would be a hoot to drive that. Just the style. If it drives as fun as even, just if it drives as fun as it looks, that would be a hoot.
Yeah. All right. Let's talk a little bit more Ford. This week, Ford made an interesting announcement about their Oakville assembly plant. So a year and a half ago, more than that, I think, they announced that they were going to end production of the Edge and the Nautilus, the Ford Edge and the Lincoln Nautilus, at the Oakville assembly plant, and that they were going to convert in 2024, they were going to convert that plant over to building EVs, and this was supposed to be the home of the new three-row electric SUVs that Ford was going to build. So an Explorer Aviator-sized pair of SUVs, one for Ford, one for Lincoln. We're now more than halfway through 2024. The plant has not been retooled to build those vehicles. It will not be retooled to build those vehicles. Instead, Ford has decided to put production of those vehicles, which have been delayed from 2025 to 2027, somewhere else. And, you know, so they could go to Quatalon where they build the Mach-Es, could go to Dearborn where they build the Lightning, who knows, or somewhere else entirely. They could do them in Chicago, where the Explorer and Aviator are built now. But Oakville is not going to be left out in the lurch because Ford currently is selling every Super Duty truck that they can build between their Kansas City assembly plant and the Lorain, Ohio assembly plant where they build the heavier duty, the, you know, F550, F650, F700 trucks.
Mega trucks.
So they needed more capacity for more Super Duties because Super Duties make Ford a lot of money. And because they're mostly bought by commercial fleets, in addition to making a lot of money on the sale of the vehicle, they also make a lot of money on selling those fleets Ford Pro services. So they want more production of Super Duties, and that's what they're going to do in Oakville. Starting from 2026, the plant's going to be retooled next year over the course of 2025 to build Super Duties for 2026. They also said that there are going to be electrified Super Duties.
Ooh.
I mean, if you have a fleet and you're hauling things, maybe 50 miles, like around a town or, you know, a regional area. Yeah. You could throw a EV in there. Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's going to be an EV. Ford has previously
a Ram supercharged.
That's what I think. Like a Ram charger.
Yeah.
EREV, extended range EV, and maybe just regular hybrids too. So, you know, based on what they have in the F-150, like the Power Boost style hybrids and extended range EVs. So with a bigger battery and an engine that just works as a range extender.
I wonder how long they'll do that. I wonder how. So you're a fleet person. You buy, let's say, a town. You buy 15 of these with the range extender. After, you know, 5 years, you're looking to upgrade your stuff. You look at the miles that these things are actually driving, and you probably say to yourself, you know what? Instead of having two powertrains, I could probably just get away with one and then just go to EVs.
Well,
I feel like it's going to be a stepping, you're going to have mixed fleets.
Well, a lot of those, you know, a lot of those municipal fleets, they're already using Lightnings. You know, they're actually getting fairly common in those fleets. But I think, you know, where we're going to see like the range extenders is for things like utility bucket trucks, You know, 'cause those things, you know, these are built on like, you know, an F-550 chassis, like my neighbor is building his overlanding rig on one of those. And so those are typically sold as chassis cabs. So you get just the cab on the front and, yeah. and the back end is just a bare chassis, and they put all kinds of different stuff on there. So they use them for like tow trucks, but you know, also bucket trucks that electric utilities use to get the crews up, you know, to fix the broken wires and things like that and replace transformers. And, you know, those things, you know, when they're on a job site, when they're on a site fixing stuff, typically, you know, they're sitting there with the engine idling, you know, to drive the pumps, you know, the hydraulic pumps to move these things up and down and all that sort of stuff. Doing an EREV version of that would actually make a lot of sense, because yeah. then they could use the battery to do that, and the truck doesn't have to sit there idling.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Strange and exciting world.
Yeah. So those are coming from 2026. And then the last bit of Ford stuff is I get to drive the new Explorer, the 2025 Explorer, which is, contrary to what they say, not all new.
It's not
even close to all
new. It's not even really all new. Kind of.
Yeah. It's got a new front fascia, new tail lights. The interior actually is pretty substantially new.
That's where the big changes. I thought it was much better. It was greatly improved.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, the interior is a big change. So, you know, one of the problems with when they launched the current generation Explorer back in 2019, one of the issues with it was still a lot of hard plastics in there, but also that center touchscreen, the current Explorer still uses Sync 3. And so I'm pretty sure that, you know, they won't acknowledge this, but I'm pretty sure that when they designed it, they originally designed it only for the 8-inch screen, which was the standard screen on the Explorer. And then at some point in the program, they decided, oh, we need to have a bigger screen. We need to put a 10-inch screen in there. But the problem is the way they had the dashboard designed, the center vents were actually on either side of that 8-inch screen. So you couldn't put a larger screen in there without completely re-engineering the dashboard and moving those vents. And so what they ended up doing was the 8-inch screen is horizontal. It's a landscape style. The 10-inch screen was portrait style, because that was the biggest screen that they could fit in between, in that same space in between the vents.
Yeah.
And if you've ever driven an Explorer with that 10-inch screen, the interface always seemed a little unfinished.
Yeah.
You know, it's like it wasn't really using the space that you had on the screen effectively. Well, now both of those screens are gone. The Explorer is the first Ford brand vehicle to get the new Ford digital experience.
Ooh.
The Sync name is gone. No more Sync. So this is not Sync 5. This is the Ford digital experience, which is their branding for their new Android automobile.
Sounds like a planetarium.
Yeah. So it's the system it's their new Android automotive system with Google services and everything in there. So it's basically the same. It's the same software that's in the new Nautilus. This is the first Ford to have it, but instead of the pillar to pillar screen that they have in the Nautilus, they just have a regular 13-inch touchscreen in the middle. The vent has now been moved down, and they're underneath the screen, the center vents. And what's really nice is there's this nice little shelf that they built underneath the vents. So there's a row of some physical controls underneath the vents, you know, so you got the volume switch and the auto park and the hazard lights and the camera and the traction control off button. And then this nice little shelf under there. And that's where they put the wireless charging pad. If you have a trim,
it's actually fantastic because you can fit two phones there. There's a wireless charging pad, but there's a slot right next to it where you can put another phone. A little piece sort of keeps them separated. And there's also a piece to the front. It sort of curves up ever so slightly, so you don't have to worry about them sliding into each other or just like sliding off into the car. So they're nicely secured, and it's a nice spot. It's like it's a unique place to have them that high. They're higher than they are in most cars. It's a good spot, and you're probably also less likely to space it, walk halfway to the car and go, dang it, and have to reach back in,
turn around, grab your phone,
because it's sort of right at.
It's a little landing port for phones.
It's actually really nice. I like that.
You can also, You can also store your game controller there because you can play games on the system when the car is parked. So you get Asphalt 5, I think, and a couple of other, there's a few other games that are available that you can play on there while you're sitting there waiting in line to pick up your kids after school. Okay. Things like
So the Ford Explorer is a cop car. So if someone's driving a black Ford Explorer, everyone's slowing down around you. Mm-hmm. So now, because of these games with the new Ford Explorer, just cops playing video games.
Yep.
I can serve and get the high score on Asphalt.
So, yeah. So overall, the interior is much nicer. The materials are nicer. There's now padded surfaces on the side of the center console. You know, so if your knee is resting up against that, it's not resting against a hard plastic surface. There's a little bit of padding there. So it feels nicer, looks nicer. Much improved interior.
Yeah, I thought the interior was like, it wasn't just like a small change. It was dramatic. It looks so much better. It's just like you're talking about how the screen is integrated now. It makes much more sense. All the soft touch surfaces, just the look of it. They did a fantastic job making, because the old one I thought looked kind of
cheap.
It looked cheap.
Especially for, you know, something that can easily cost you, you know, $50,000 to $60,000.
Which is not cheap. It had not cheap pricing, but cheap interior look to it. And I think they've fixed that. I think it looks so much nicer than it did before. It's been a while since I've opened an Explorer and thought like, wow, that's actually really nice. This one, that's exactly what you think. It was beautiful.
Yeah. Like the Mach-E, you know, it's got the B&O sound system in there, mm-hmm. With the soundbar style set up across the dash. Unlike the Mach-E, it actually doesn't sound very good. Sounds kind of flat. So
you think it's? I didn't think it's. You know what? I don't know that I said it would sound flat, but I didn't listen to it and think like, "Wow, this is great." I was like, it sounds fine." It's
kind of mediocre.
It was like so-so. Yeah, I wonder why.
Yeah, I don't know. Maybe they can tune that a little more, but yeah, it didn't sound great.
Yeah.
What else? Let's see. Powertrains. Civilians can no longer buy an Explorer with the hybrid. That's now reserved only for cop cars and fleets because they really like them. And apparently the civilians, regular customers, weren't buying very many of them. So they said, okay, fine, we'll just have the four-cylinder and the V6s for regular people, and cops can have all the hybrids. So you get the choice of the 2.3-liter four-cylinder EcoBoost or the 3-liter V6 with 300 or 400 horsepower. You also have Blue Cruise on here, which, you know, it's the same as Blue Cruise on an F-150 or a Mach-E or, you know, on a Lincoln. So has the same complaints. I want to give a shout out to Kevin at Ford. Kevin is a listener of the show and also happens to be head of the Blue Cruise team at Ford.
Oh, I have a comment for him, Kevin, if you're listening. So when I was driving
Blue Cruise,
and I had it in, I was using Blue Cruise, and it's supposed to now, I guess we as humans don't want the car to really be centered when we're passing something really big or something really big is passing us. We kind of want to move a little bit to the side, a little off center. Not like we leave the lane, but like you're going to hug the left lane a little bit more if there's a great big truck in the right lane. So it's supposed to sort of notice that and not like jerk you to one side all of a sudden, but just edge you ever so slightly to the side so that you feel more comfortable intuitively. I happen to use it to change lanes, a little automatic lane change thing. Like I told it I wanted it to change lanes. It waited to make sure that it was clear. And it took me to the left-hand lane. And I was passing you know when they're moving the houses, like the prefab houses that are just a little too
wide? Oh, yeah.
So I was passing
Wide load
with a little, you know, with the trucks on either side with the flashing lights. So I'm passing this wide load and it did move me further, like it did it right. I thought, am I going to feel like I'm so close? Because I was ready to take the wheel. I'm like, I got to adjust this. It nicely moved me a little further. So I was further to the left so that it felt like this giant wide load on the right was not intrusive. I'm like, that was perfect. Like it was exactly what I would have done in terms of how it changed the lane and how it moved. Like, okay, I'm going to give you some extra room because this thing's huge, and move me further to the left to keep me from feeling squished up against this. So gold star, Kevin.
Gold star for Kevin.
Yes.
Yeah, Kevin and I had a long conversation about Blue Cruise and what's good about it, and you know, my complaints about it as well.
Yeah, it's and not so, perfect.
Yeah, he's aware of them now, and hopefully, you know, hopefully he'll get them fixed whether in a few weeks.
Whether he likes it or not, he knows.
Yeah. Now, Kevin, thanks for listening to the show and keep listening. You know, I mean, the system has gotten a lot better since it first launched. Mm-hmm. There's still things to fix, you know, some of which she acknowledged are issues. You know, hopefully, you know, over the next year or two, we'll start to see some of those things get addressed. You know, just keep cracking away at it. So thanks, Kevin. Let's see. And I think, was there anything else you wanted to, what did you think about the off-road course with the Explorer?
Oh, you know, it was a very short course, yeah. But we did have you drove it, you were the wave before me. My wave the night before, we had thunderstorms that felt like the sky was going to split open and swallow the state of Michigan. So it like poured rain. So there was some real mud for us. So even though it was a short
course, yeah, it was dry when we went through.
Oh, it was muddy for us. It was really, really muddy. So I don't know if Ford meant for it to be that, like clearly, like luck of the draw, we got the rain. It was really, really muddy. It was a decent, there were a couple spots where it was kind of squirrely. And if you wanted to, you could get stuck potentially in something because it's just, and I think we all did the same thing. That's the worst part right there. Let's drive through that and see what it does. We're all driving through it, making it more and more rutted on every lap. But it did do nice. I felt like it handled pretty well in that mud, the kind of mud that would, you know, some all-wheel drive systems and such would not be really keen to take a big vehicle like that through. It was a very short course. It wasn't like we were off-roading like, you know, real hardcore off-roader, but it did manage that, which is probably the most you're ever going to manage. Most people are not really doing anything crazy, but it was if you had like a dirt road that you live on, or if you had a muddy field you had to drive through because you're going to a cabin or whatever. I thought it actually did pretty good.
Yeah. You know, and the Explorers that they had that are currently available, you know, there's four trim levels. There's the XLT is gone. Now the base trim level is active. And then there's ST line, Platinum, and ST is the performance version. There's no real off-road version currently available. Back in April or March, when they first showed this to us, you know, several months ago, and they did the backgrounder on it, they teased an image. I can't remember if they've shown this one publicly. I think the image is out there. That the image that they showed was just a picture of one wheel. And said, you know, coming, I think, late this year. And the wheel that's on there, on this other variant of the Explorer that's coming, has an orange or bronze paint around one of the pockets on the wheel, which is the same look that they have on the Tremor, Ranger Tremor, and the Maverick Tremor. So I'm guessing that, you know, that the former Timberline is being replaced by a new Tremor trim level that will be the more off-road oriented, because you know, everybody now has got to have an off-road oriented trim level for their SUVs.
You have to, even if it's very little bit off-roadier than your other one, you could do some little thing, tiny little thing.
Yeah. Honda's got Trail Sport and, you know, Chevy's got Z71, and you know, there's all
Subaru has their own thing. Wilderness, aren't those?
Wilderness, yeah.
Wilderness from Subaru, yeah. Everybody's so got something.
We'll probably see an Explorer Tremor before the end of the year for those that need a little more, you know, at least, you know, want some all terrain tires or something from the factory, because none of the current trim levels have anything that you would consider an off road tire. They're just regular all season tires. Mm-hmm. All right. I think that is it for this week. Anything else that we need to cover?
Nothing on my end.
All right.
Bye, everybody.
We will talk to you. Well, actually, they will talk to you next time because I'm going to be on vacation.
He's going on vacation and I get to do all the I get to record stuff. Yeah. I have the passwords, guys.
Nicole's in charge next week.
They won't put me in charge because it'd just be chaos. I'm like, okay, this podcast is going to be hosted by a dog and a ferret that I found in a bucket.
No dogs, no ferrets. Just you, me, and I believe we have a guest next week. TBA.
Yes. Yeah. Jill will be here.
Jill. Okay. I wasn't sure. Okay. Excellent. Yep.
Someone will be
here. Well, I wasn't sure he confirmed I was getting, so I was going to wait. Sam announced it. Jill, yay.
Yeah, so. Jill will be here next week. Hello,
excellent. Well, enjoy your vacation, Sam.
Thank you. I'm looking forward to it. Hopefully my plane will be able to take off from Detroit and actually get there.
Fingers crossed. I think that's all gotten smoothly now, more smooth, so you should be good.
Okay. Well, I hope so. All right.
Bye, everyone.
Thanks, everybody. Bye.
Picture this. You're in the garage, hands covered in grease, just finished tuning up your engine with a part you found on eBay, and you realize, you know what? I could also use new brakes. So where do you go next? Back to eBay. You can find anything there. It's unreal. Wipers, headlights, even cold air intakes, it's all there. And you've got eBay Guaranteed Fit. You order a part, and if it doesn't fit, send it back. Simple as that. Look, DIY fixes can be major. Doesn't matter if it's just maintenance or a major mod. You got it. Especially when things are guaranteed to fit. So when you dive into your next car project, start with eBay. All the parts you need at prices you'll love. Guaranteed to fit every time. eBay. Things people love.
New year, same great savings. All in the Kroger app. Get Kroger Spiral Sliced Ham for 89 cents a pound with your card and an additional $25 purchase limit too. Then get large avocados or mangoes for 99 cents each with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.